Blog Talk Radio.
Sound Health Options Show for November 24th, 2013, with Richard Olson and
Sherry Edwards.
Good morning, Sherry. How are you?
Good morning. I am freezing. They have turned the heat off in this building over the weekend.
Yikes.
And it's about 40 degrees.
It takes so long
out.
To bring it
Small
back to temperature.
Small bundled up here, catching my coat and sweater on every gadget we have open here. But we're going to have a great show. Absolutely phenomenal.
Absolutely.
Show.
Absolutely.
We've got some announcements we need to do. One is why we're doing this show, and that's just to share ideas and information about sound health, and we're sponsored by the Sound Health Research Center. We want to see that authentic information is brought to the public, and we want to put health back into the idea of health care. And with that on our minds, and we've probably had enough of it, Obamacare, or how they're trying to talk about it now, the Affordable Health Care Act, is getting a lot of bad press. And the latest one is that Obama is putting together these death panels that they said wouldn't come, and looking at who gets medication and looking at cuts in Medicare. So more and more and more, people need us. People absolutely need everything that we have to offer, and it's just becoming more and more obvious. I ought to love Obamacare because it pushes people toward us. We had a man in last week. Well, actually, his wife came to talk to us, and his doctor wanted her husband's cholesterol at 72. And it was at 80, and because it was only at 80, the doctor wanted to put him on statin drugs. That's crazy. You will find out after today's show that that is absolutely crazy, and that the doctor is on the verge of killing this man, if not pushing him into Alzheimer's, all in the name of, well, this is what the drug companies told us that we ought to do. So we're going to be talking about that today. I shouldn't have said that first, because that would have been a great lead-in, but I need to talk about a couple of things. We did put up another keynote for you, and so many of you did not find the hidden tiger in here that we left it up with the answer. So the hidden tiger is on the stripes of the tiger. Can you find the hidden tiger? Let's put up those optical illusions, because we think your health is sometimes like an optical illusion, obviously hidden beneath a mix of obscure symptoms. And that's one of the things we're good at here at the Sound Health Research Center. The other question that came up over the weekend, well, during the week, was people wanted more information about the astral and the ancient pieces of information that we talk about. So the astral we're looking at now under keynote, how frequencies from outer space, well, the inner universe, brings us frequencies that change the tides and us because of the water, and we look at those frequencies as they come to Earth. Now, people have asked where to get them, and NASA has them. You'll pay dearly. We paid over $1,000 for the set that we have that's about 10 years old, so I don't know how long it is or how much it is now. There's a lot of this information available in Jill Mattson's book, Sound Secrets, especially the third chapter. So you can get that from Amazon, Sound Secrets by Jill Mattson, or you can buy it from Jill's Wings of Light. If somebody would put that in for me in chat, I would appreciate it because I've got my hands full trying to run all of these different pieces here. we do have a new project, and I am incredibly excited about this new project. I found a relationship between the vaccinations they're giving soldiers and why soldiers come out the other end with a lot of PTSD. They are stressing out their adrenals. So any of you who have access to any group that deals with these returning warriors, please get in touch. We want to put together an entire project that trains these families and groups of families to use our software for PTSD, and will even include the traumatic brain injury if that's an issue. And we want to train these. We have applied for a 501c8, which was suggested by one of you. Robert O'Leary, I don't think he's with us today, but he usually is here. And we began to look into it, and if it's specifically just nonprofit for help to the community, like the Red Cross, then we can get this status of 501c8, and anybody who's contributing gets tax deductions and all that good stuff. So I think that's an exciting project. Especially, have you seen all the statistics, Richard, that one a day now of these soldiers are killing themselves?
It's disgusting. Yes, I have.
Richard, you sound like you're in a balloon someplace. Your sound is awful. We're hearing every other word. So I guess I'll just go ahead and hog the mic here. One soldier a day average, more than is being killed in the war, is coming back here so messed up emotionally, mentally, physically, that they're killing themselves. And I want that to stop. Also, thanks to all of you for sending us articles and offers. It's great ideas, ingenious ideas have come in. So we want to make sure that we look at all of those and try to institute them. But we need help from you guys. For instance, all of you listening to the show could rebroadcast this or repost it or whatever you do with it to see that other people get the idea, or even if you'd repost the links that we're going to give you. After what you see today, and it's a very poignant 28-minute film with Dr. Stephanie Seneff, and she's going to be on the show in February live to answer your questions, but when I looked at the information that she had to report, I didn't want you guys to wait another day. So after you see this, I want you to go immediately to our 5-day class and look at these matching scholarships and think about who in your community could use them so that we can get people signed up and trained. We want to help people with these tools and solutions. It's just incredible. So about the show today, and Richard, if you get back on, just interrupt me because I can't tell whether you've hit
the... I think I'm back now.
Oh, okay.
Is that better
great.
Now?
Yes,
okay.
Better now. Do you want to add anything to what I've already said?
Nothing other than I'm extremely excited about today's guest and looking forward to having a real conversation with her. But the information that she's talking about is so amazing, the way she puts it together, that I'm excited to get to that.
Well, let me just say a few more words and we'll get there. When we decide to do shows on a certain topic, we start looking, and the almost to the minute when we decided to do something about the truth about statins, people started sending me articles and information. What we do is really about self-trust as an incentive to be self-responsible. If you really look at our bottom line, that's what we're going for. Trust yourself about what you hear. Use Nano Voice to confirm it. Trust yourself about your own health. So we used to be a nation of self-actualized, creative, seeking with self-esteem and confidence a sense of safety and belonging for ourselves and our family. Now, I think a great many people are scared. They don't have houses. They've lost their cars in bad loans. They've lost their houses. They're living on the streets. Parents' rights are being undermined. We talked last week about kids going into the hospital and the hospital taking parental rights away and keeping the children. One little girl's been there for 9 months or so that we talked about. I think it was on Happy Hour. I can't remember, but it's all over the news that you won't get your kid vaccinated. The hospital takes custody of them. You know, and it's just gotten to the place where we can't trust our food, our water, our government. We're being forced into vaccinations, forced into medications. If you don't take this medication, I won't see you as a patient. Well, one of the things that was sent to me was by Stephanie Sinoff, PhD. She has an academic career in biochemistry combined with computers, biophysics, she calls it. And she has done an interview with Joseph Mercola about statins. And as you listen to this, it's jaw-dropping. But the last 3-4 minutes are earth-changing. So we're going to share this information about who she is. And she gives us a lot of information, too. So those of you who are listening to us on Blog Talk Radio, if you'd like to watch this, we will put up the link for you to watch it later, or you can go to our site under radio and just watch this as we're publishing it. I guess it's called publishing. We're presenting it. Okay, here goes.
And she has a very interesting history from her academic perspective. And initially, she was trained in engineering, primarily, even though her undergraduate degree was in biology. And she has now developed this incredible expertise in sulfur. But as we were talking, we learned that really one of her other passions is about statins. So I'd like her to describe specifically her academic credentials, because I think that's important to put a frame on where your perspective is coming from, and then we'll discuss some information about the statins.
Okay. So I am. So I have a bachelor's degree from MIT in biology with a minor in nutrition, food and nutrition, and my PhD is in electrical engineering and computer science, also from MIT. And I've been at MIT my entire life.
Okay. Are you still there?
I'm still there.
Okay.
And now I'm a senior research scientist, which is the equivalent of a full professor on the research staff.
Okay.
So I supervise PhD students, but luckily I don't have to teach.
So you're able to devote most of your time. So you literally have a full lifetime academically of going through the literature, reading it carefully. You understand the jargon, obviously, and interpreting that. I mean, that's your profession.
Yes, in biology, I've always been interested in biology, even though, actually even my work has been related to biology. My PhD was in an auditory model, a model for human auditory processing speech. So that involved actually reading biology literature to understand how the brain processes speech. And then I've continued in the area of speech, and I have a couple hundred papers in the conference proceedings and in journal, research journals, on the topic of spoken dialogue systems. So that's generally my area of expertise.
And you've taken this expertise and you've actually applied it to data mining health information from patient-generated databases like BARS and ones that appear in WebMD that allow patients to self-report side effects from medication.
That is exactly right. And I've actually become extremely excited recently about the wealth of information that's available on the web. Grassroots information provided by individual patients where they can describe their experience with a vaccine or with a drug, and they fill out a form. So it's extremely nice for us because we get things like the patient age, and we can use that to then compare data from a particular drug or a particular vaccine against age-matched data from some other drug or some other set of vaccines or some other set of drugs. So by doing that, we can look at word frequencies, patterns in these two data sets, and uncover really interesting side effects associated with various drugs. So we have applied that to the statin drugs with great success, and we have a couple of papers coming out in conference.
So these are new papers coming up, but as you mentioned, you've published hundreds of papers
Yes.
in peer-reviewed scientific literature, so
Right.
you're an accepted scientific researcher, there's no question.
Right.
And I'm wondering if you can comment on some of these observations. So you continue to publish, and one of your passions now is understanding statins and how they impact on cholesterol. And because of your previous, well, you had a personal issue with your husband, and then you obviously have a degree in biology, so there's some connections there. So you have the scientific training. So you put together these things, and along with your PhD work and data analysis, and you've compiled some information about statin drugs.
That's
and
right.
I'm wondering if you can, and published, sought, and wrote papers,
yes.
You know, obviously written hundreds of papers, you know how to write a paper. So you submitted these to the credentialed scientific journals documenting some of the findings you found with statins, and I'm wondering if you can share what your experience was when you submitted these papers.
Right. Well, we wrote a paper on Alzheimer's. I was very interested in the connection between Alzheimer's and cholesterol, low cholesterol actually, being a source of Alzheimer's, and statins in particular, because they lower cholesterol are going to make that problem worse. And we wrote a paper that had a lot of, you know, references and a good story about the effect of low cholesterol in damaging the brain and inducing Alzheimer's. And in that paper, we made several references to statin drugs. And we submitted it to a journal, and it came back rejected. And part of the grounds of rejection had to do with the mention of statins. And so we took out all the mentions of statins and resubmitted the paper to a different journal, and then it got accepted. And this paper is in, you can read this paper, in the European Journal of Internal Medicine.
Think about what she just said. They had all this information about statins, and they put it in a paper, and they mentioned the statins, but the people would not publish it in any journal. So they took out all mention of statins and just reported what they found, and then the information, the article, was readily accepted. She goes on to explain what she thinks is wrong with this.
And I can tell you that in the 10 years since statins were first introduced from 1980 to 1990, the incidence of heart failure doubled. And right now, heart failure has beat out cardiovascular disease as the number one cause of death in America. I mean, it hasn't been...
When did that transition occur?
I don't know, but I've read that it's true today.
Mm.
I mean, it's just kept on going up, along with the increased use of statins. And it is very clear to me that statins are causing the heart failure. And I can give you all the reasons why. It's all, you know, different. Of course, you know about coenzyme Q10, and that's part of it. Statins not only interfere with cholesterol synthesis, but they basically interfere with an early step in the mevalonate pathway. And that mevalonate pathway is the central pathway for all the steroid, you know, management in the body. And steroids are really, really important. All the steroid products, cholesterol, vitamin D is actually very, very similar to cholesterol, and it's produced from cholesterol in the skin. And then you have all the sex hormones, you know, estrogen and testosterone and all of those. And then you have cortisone, and you have nadolacols, which are involved in keeping the membranes inside the cells healthy. And you have the coenzyme Q10, which is critical to the energy generation in the Krebs cycle in the cell. So all of these products of this pathway, the mevalonate pathway, are messed up by statins. So I don't personally understand why anyone would think that was something that would be worth taking. And here we are with tens of millions of people feeling convinced that they have to take their statin drug to keep their LDL under control.
Yeah, I always thought that there was one small subset of people who have the genetic condition familial hypercholesterolemia, where they have cholesterol levels in excess of 330, 350 because of an
right, that's true.
Do you think that there's an indication that they would benefit from statin?
If I were one of them, I would not take a statin.
Really? And what's your reasons for that?
I just think that the drug is far too destructive.
Okay.
I cannot believe it's something that interferes with something that important in biology could possibly be a good idea, even in that case.
That was my only exception, but it still is less than 1 in 1,000 people taking statins.
Right, it's a very tiny piece of the population.
Yeah.
I just feel the drug is so toxic that it can't even be good for them.
Okay.
I wanted to show you a bit of what the statins are, so you can go to just Wikipedia and look at the statin drugs, just wikipedia.org, and then put in statins. Statin singular won't get you to this, but statins, plural, will. And what we have done in the last 3 months is take this entire pathway of statins and the mevalonate, because we had some people on a few months ago, the Yosefs, that were studying this mevalonate pathway, and we've gone through and created a pathway and a computer program called Disturbing Fats, and we are going to make that available to the public.
That's my personal opinion.
Probably right. So from that understanding that the cholesterol sulfate is how you got into the broader picture of sulfur, because it has far additional implications other than heart disease, but perhaps you can continue to expand on the heart disease implication.
Yeah, well, it was really kind of, I had a few epiphanies along my research path. Here and there I would get a paper that would suddenly enlighten me, and then it would take me down an entire new direction. And the cholesterol sulfate in the fact that the platelets, they were clearly very happy when they saw cholesterol sulfate, and when they didn't, they were unhappy. So it was clear that the platelets needed cholesterol sulfate in the plaque to be happy. And that's where I thought, and then I started looking in, and I found a wonderful article by a guy named Strott. It was called Cholesterol Sulfate in Human Physiology, What's It All About? Fascinating article. And cholesterol sulfate is a very overlooked molecule. There are not that many people doing research on it.
Do we even assay for that? There's not a blood test for it.
There is, but we don't do it. I think there are some easy experiments that could be done, measuring people's cholesterol sulfate level with reference to how much sunlight exposure they get. And this is where I got into another idea. I was sort of trying to figure out where does cholesterol sulfate come from otherwise, because the statin attitude is, okay, you've got high LDL. High LDL is correlated with heart disease. We've got a drug that can knock that LDL down, and then voila, you're going to be happy. My attitude is, you've got high LDL. That LDL is needed for something. What it's needed for is to produce cholesterol sulfate to supply the heart, and probably also the brain, by the way, because you get blocked arteries feeding the brain as well. How can you produce that cholesterol sulfate some other way in order that the cardiovascular disease does not have to be there? That's my thinking. What is the way that cholesterol sulfate is normally produced? And when you read something like Strott's article, you find out that the skin produces huge amounts of cholesterol sulfate. And it's very high concentration in the healthy skin, in the epidermis and in the outer layer, and that cholesterol sulfate in the skin is very important for keeping microbes out and for keeping water in, among many other things. But it basically provides a healthy barrier to the world in the skin.
Does some of it get transferred into the blood?
Exactly. So this article by Strott said we're not sure where it comes from in the blood, but probably the skin provides a large part of what's in the blood. And vitamin D is produced in the skin, and it's sulfated. This is something very few people realize. The vitamin D that you produce in your skin goes into your blood as vitamin D sulfate.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it's very, very important. And when you take a vitamin D pill, it's not sulfated.
Yeah, because for the longest time, and you know, to this day, my consistent recommendations, and of course, vitamin D is the first, get it from the sun. That's the number one recommendation. Obviously, a large percentage of the population cannot do that in the winter, at least in North America. So then my second recommendation is to use a safe tanning bed, which more closely approximates the sun. And if that's still not an option, then to swallow the vitamin D orally, but that is the last choice.
Absolutely.
And which is probably better than not taking any, but still not as good as the sun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just from a theoretical perspective, it made sense, but I didn't understand the science behind it. But it sounds to be one of the first good explanations as to why that is true.
And it turns out there is a food that contains vitamin D sulfate naturally. And that food is raw milk.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Of course.
Very interesting.
And what would raw milk
product? Trying very hard.
Would it be raw milk products too? Like,
I think so. I mean, okay. So I don't know if processing, you know.
Like
what
the butter or the
yogurt
or kefir.
I don't know for sure, but I know raw milk contains vitamin D sulfate. And I think it's absolutely essential for the baby. And this is also something extremely interesting. I'm going to get off on a little tangent here with the sulfate. This is something I only discovered recently, and I was really thrilled to discover this. When a woman has about 1.5, there's a unit, I don't know what the unit is, 1.5 units of cholesterol sulfate normally in her blood. When she gets pregnant, this number starts going up, and throughout the pregnancy it rises in her blood. But more than that, cholesterol sulfate accumulates in the villi, in the placenta, that sort of hook up with the baby's blood supply. So this is where the nutrients are transferred from the placenta to the baby. And the cholesterol sulfate rises tremendously in the placenta, in those villi, over the course of the pregnancy, going to levels like 24. So 1.5, 24. That's hugely more cholesterol sulfate in those villi towards the end of the pregnancy. And then when the baby's born, colostrum contains a lot of sulfur, even more than milk. And then mother's milk contains sulfur as well. So that there's a very strong attempt to get sulfur to the baby right around the time it's born. But more than that, cholesterol. And the thing that is really special about cholesterol sulfate is that it can travel in the blood, freely in the blood. It's water soluble. It's actually soluble in both water and fat. Cholesterol has to be packaged up inside LDL and cholesterol. And so when you don't have
but
enough...
But the sulfate is what makes the water soluble.
Sulfate is what makes the water soluble. And that is true for all the sterols, or at least many of them. I've certainly found it to be true for estrogen, for vitamin D. So all of these things, and even things like resveratrol goes into the blood, sulfated.
So I didn't realize that the vitamin D was sulfated. Of course, the vitamin D that is formed in the skin gets transported and is not really the active form. It gets converted by the liver and the kidney.
Yes, right. But, there
but
is all that.
But is the sulfur still contained in the active form?
Well, it's interesting with sulfate because sulfate actually inactivates vitamin D. The sulfated form of vitamin D does not work for calcium transport, which I find very, very intriguing. And in fact, I think it's the sulfated form for vitamin D that offers the protection from cancer. It strengthens your immune system. It protects you from cardiovascular disease. You know how they say vitamin D, it does
all
these things.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
And it's good for your brain, helps depression. I think all of those effects of vitamin D are effects of vitamin D sulfate.
And your suspicion is that the simple oral non-sulfated form will not provide the same benefit.
And cannot get there. I mean, I read that it cannot be converted to vitamin D sulfate. I was stunned to read that.
That is an amazing point.
Yeah. So you have to get the sulfated form in the skin. And then the other thing that's really interesting with the baby is that a mother who has high cholesterol, high serum cholesterol, so would you guess that her baby would have high serum cholesterol or low serum cholesterol when it's born? This is, of course, a loaded question.
I would suspect it would be high.
It's low.
Oh.
It's low. So now can you figure out why?
It's using it for synthesis of important...
It can't get through.
Oh.
It can't get through. And the mother has high serum cholesterol, I think, because she has low serum cholesterol sulfate. I think that you go together.
Okay.
So in order to... So the way to bring down your LDL in a healthy way is to get sunlight exposure in the skin. You will produce... Your skin will produce cholesterol sulfate, which will then flow freely through the blood, not packaged up inside LDL. And therefore, the liver doesn't have to make so much LDL. So the LDL goes down. And in fact, places that are sunny have significantly, there's a complete inverse relationship between sunlight and cardiovascular disease. The more sunlight, the less cardiovascular disease. And I read a lovely article. It's pretty much just linear. You're looking at places and their amount of sun and latitude versus cardiovascular disease. It's a straight line.
Yeah, and the key assumption there, however, is that people are going out in the sun because it's certainly possible to live in tropical environments and stay inside all the time or go outside completely cut with your skin covered.
That's right.
So and you don't get the benefit.
Yeah.
It's not just living environment. You have to be exposed to the sunlight on your exposed skin.
That's right. So this thing with the baby then is that the mother who has high cholesterol has low cholesterol sulfate. The cholesterol sulfate can't deliver both the cholesterol and the sulfur can't get delivered to the baby. And therefore the baby is born with low cholesterol. The baby is also born with fatty deposits in its arteries already. Fatty deposits. So this is, the fatty deposits are supposed to be associated with high cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
But this is low cholesterol plus fatty deposits. And they're there, I think, to start this cholesterol sulfate program that's replacing the one that isn't happening because there's an anticipation that this kid has a problem and has the same problem that adults have when they get cardiovascular disease.
But it's normal physiological because that's the way healthy children are born.
Children who have adequate cholesterol sulfate delivered from their mother do not have the fatty
deposits. Oh, okay. Sorry, I missed
that. Consequence of the low cholesterol.
Okay.
So it's association of low cholesterol with fatty deposits rather than high cholesterol. It's bizarre. But the high cholesterol that's associated with fatty deposits in the adult that's causing heart disease is a solution, not a cause. It's a solution.
It's a complete turnaround.
It's a complete turnaround. And the worst thing you can do is to clobber the LDL. or the heart disease, because you're going to end up with heart failure.
Which is just for reinforcing a common fact that I think a number of our viewers may not be aware of, but 1 in 4 Americans over the age of 45 are currently on this drug therapy.
That is incredible.
1 in 4, 25%.
That is so shocking. And I have to say, I know personally, they're prescribing it to young, newlywed women in their 20s who are about to start a family, and they're not letting them even know. The doctor doesn't even tell them that this is class X for pregnancy, like thalidomide.
I did not know it was class X.
Yeah, well, see, you don't even know it. I mean, it's shocking to me.
Class X?
Yes, it destroys the nervous
system. The only
other
class X I know is new is Accutane.
Thalidomide. Remember thalidomide?
Or Accutane, too.
Yeah, well, thalidomide was horrible.
Oh,
I was
sure.
a child
yeah.
when I
that was
started
actually
seeing those pictures.
One of the good things the FDA did. It was a world leader.
I was
leader.
So proud of my country, and it pains me when I think today where we've come, because I remember I was 10 years old. I was a girl, right? And there was a woman who headed the FDA, and I saw this article in, like, Newsweek or something, and there were these babies without arms, without legs, without ears, you know. And this big article, and it was heroic. This woman who headed the FDA kept the drug out of our country, and I just stood tall as an American and as a female. I was so proud.
It's probably one of the last good things the FDA did.
I'm so, you know, frustrated today at where we've come in this whole thing, and it's just amazing, you know? So
it was started with good intentions, as many federal agencies are, but it tended to deteriorate over time as they had this merger of corporate influences that really misdirect their initial intentions.
Well, it's gotten to the point where the FDA is basically, as I see it, owned by the drug companies, because they get their funding, you know, a lot of their funding they get from the drug companies. It's in their interest to please the person who gets money, you know?
Sure.
It's extremely broken system right now, I feel.
That's resulted in 1 in 4 Americans now.
Actively
being encouraged by the media, by almost every health
amazing.
Expert out there.
I mean, I have friends who, they have a whole bunch of problems with their health, and every one of those problems I happen to know is a side effect of statin treatment, because I've read so much about statins, and I've even studied, actually, statins, and I have papers that I'm going to be presenting at conferences, 2 papers on. This is actually wonderful, because it's blending my real work, which is building spoken dialogue systems, with this sidekick thing, which is going to become my full-time job in the future. I'm working towards that goal. But so the beginning thing is to build these systems, which are spoken dialogue systems that provide access to information on the web. And so what I did was I got a whole bunch of statin drug reviews by patients. And you can grab these from the web. They're on places like WebMD. I mean, all these sites that have drug reviews of side effects of experiences with all the different drugs.
So these are reports that patients have, and they just compile them.
It's very much grassroots, patient provided reports.
WebMD facilitates that? That's surprising.
Yeah, there's patient.
Because they're really sponsored by the drug companies.
I know. Well, they provide an opportunity for people to just fill out their experience with the drug, and sometimes mm-hmm. they'll say it worked, you know, great, and I'm very happy. And so every drug has all these reports. And you can just grab them from the web, and you can process them using natural language techniques.
Mm.
And you can use there's a straightforward mathematical formula you can use to figure out by looking at word frequencies. You know, if a certain word shows up 100 times when people are talking about this drug and only 2 times when they're talking about that drug, then you can guess that this drug probably causes that side effect.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually have a specific measure of the likelihood that this distribution would have occurred.
Is it something you figured out, or something you learned from?
That's standard technology. I mean, I know it because it's standard stuff in my field, but I'm just applying it to a very new domain. No one else that I'm aware of has actually applied it to this domain.
That's a very interesting innovation.
It's very, very useful, and it's terrifying, actually, what you find out about statin drugs by doing this. And my papers talk about it, but...
What have you learned?
Yeah,
muscle
pain and weakness, which are known side effects, huge. You know, 0.00000 several zero likelihood of this distribution being occurring by chance. And what we did is we took all the pilostatin reviews, like 8,000 of them, and then we sampled 8,000 other reviews distributed in the same age. It was nice because the reviews all tell you how old the person is, so you can sample from this large, you know, 100,000 reviews of all different drugs. And sample populations that has the same age distribution as you're seeing in the statin drugs, because you wouldn't want to be comparing children
sure.
with old people. And then you can just look at the words and see which ones come out much more commonly on the statin side. And so muscle pain and weakness are hugely more common on the statin side. But also things like ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's disease, Parkinson's disease, neuropathy, diabetes, arthritis, of course, cognitive problems. All of these things are statistically significantly more likely, and in many cases strongly statistically significantly more likely with the statin drugs than with this collection of all these other drugs. So these, I think, are all side effects of statins. It's very, very disturbing in my view. And, of course, ALS, I mean, is also, other people have written about statins causing ALS. I'm not the only person who's, in fact, all of these things, there's articles about diabetes and statins. You can find these in the obscure literature, of course, because
the diabetes connection is actually relatively recent observation.
Yeah, there's a couple of recent papers that I'm aware of that talk specifically about statins
causing
diabetes.
It really
diabetes.
Wasn't known.
Alzheimer's, of course, is a very interesting story with statins. And one of the things I find is that the industry intentionally tries to promote the concept that their drug protects from something, when they, I'm guessing, think it does the opposite. So they want to prime you to be happy, to think, first of all, that it protects, and then finally you find out, oh, well, it doesn't actually protect after all, rather than thinking maybe it actually causes it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Alzheimer's is very interesting, because early on they pushed hard, and Newsweek had an article saying,
sure, for promotion.
Isn't this great? Even in addition to lowering your cholesterol, you will also protect yourself from Alzheimer's. And recently, now there's just recently come out a placebo-controlled study, and I'm sure they tried hard to get the drug to behave itself in Alzheimer's, and they found that the treatment group had worse outcomes than the non-treatment group, you know, increased, accelerated mental decline in the people who were taking the statins.
Now, well, just a question I had on some of the statins, the studies suggest that for people with heart disease, there may be another benefit from statins, this anti-inflammatory,
yes,
anti-thrombotic component, which may actually be beneficial. Not related to the only question. I'm wondering what your comments or views on that are.
Yes, I've read several articles along those lines, and that's kind of become, I think, almost accepted even by some of the mainstream, mm-hmm, researchers, that it's the anti-inflammatory effect that is offering the protection that you observe in sort of, because it, for the men in their 50s, carefully controlled designs, they can show, and they have numbers like 30%, mm-hmm, you know, which sounds really good, 30% decrease in the incidence of heart attacks. Now, this is men in their 50s, and men in their 50s don't have many heart attacks. So in terms of the absolute numbers, it's actually very, very small.
Right. That's a major sort of play on words that they,
yes,
do. The difference between absolute
and relative
risk reduction, which makes it appear far greater impact than it really is.
Absolutely the case. And in fact, it would take 60 men in their 50s to take a statin drug for 4 or 5 years in order for one of those 60 men to get rid of one heart attack, and it might even be a very small heart attack that doesn't really matter, and everybody else would have no benefit. And all of those people would suffer from all the side effects that statins cause. I think statins basically make you grow older faster. I mean, that's the way I would most easily characterize them. And it's interesting, some of the side effects that we found, you know, losing your hair, mm-hmm, and, of course, mental decline, frailty. I mean, frailty is just huge. Statins really make your muscles weak. You can't open the pickle jar anymore, you know, and these are all sort of, and arthritis, diabetes, these are all things that are associated with getting older, you know?
Alzheimer's.
And Alzheimer's, of course, and Parkinson's and ALS. I mean, all of these things is basically, statins make you grow older faster. And then you end up with heart failure. I mean, they cause heart failure is also statistically, mm-hmm, significant, and then liver disease and kidney failure, all these things.
Do you think that the risk for heart failure overall increases the total death rate from people with heart, even with people without heart disease, that compensates for the benefit they get from the anti-inflammatory, anti-thrombotic benefit?
Yeah, let me go back to the anti-inflammatory. I didn't quite understand this question. Maybe
there's a certain benefit from anti-inflammatory and decreasing the blood viscosity. Is that overwhelmed by the risk for heart disease that results from taking these statins?
The heart failure.
Yeah.
See, heart failure is
heart
a different,
failure is what I'm
is
interested.
A different syndrome altogether, and that's
right.
why I think they keep talking about cardiovascular disease.
So
they're careful to use the term.
Right. When you typically hear about the term cardiovascular disease, that excludes heart failure.
Excludes heart
it's a
failure.
Total different disease category.
Yes. Which is very convenient for them, because then people aren't really realizing
That's another way to confuse people and mislead them. When actually, in the total perspective, it really should be classified as part of heart disease because it's affecting
the
heart.
I know. It annoys me that they get by with that. And the statins, I'll tell you how they cause, and they also cause all this calcium buildup. You get these calcified, you know, valves and things like that, and you get calcium is very, very important for the for signaling in muscles, and of course the heart is a muscle. I mean, you figure if statins wreck the muscles, which they do, the skeletal muscles, they absolutely wreck them. The heart is a muscle too, and the only reason the heart is not wrecked as badly is because the skeletal muscles are tasked with helping out the heart. And it's interesting what happens with statins. This is actually an interesting story. It's another essay that I wrote on the web. I think even after I wrote the sulfur one. The statin drugs interfere with the liver's ability to make cholesterol. That's, you know, obviously they do that. The liver needs to make cholesterol in order to store fat, and it needs to store fat in order to process fructose. And fructose, of course, high fructose diet is a huge problem. The liver can't process fructose anymore because it can't store it as fat with the statin, because it can't make the cholesterol. Now somebody else has to take care of the fructose, because fructose is really bad. It's much more glycating.
I didn't realize there was another alternative for detoxifying fructose other than the liver.
Yeah, well, so there is, and it's the muscle cells that will rescue the body. And what they do is they go into anaerobic metabolism, because you cannot handle fructose in the context of aerobic metabolism. You're going to get glycation damage. You're going to get oxidation damage. It's going to be a mess. So the muscle cells go into an anaerobic mode where there's no oxygen, and they take in the fructose ferociously, and they skim off a tiny bit of energy from it, just enough to kind of keep going, and then they produce lactate. So they basically convert the fructose into lactate, and the lactate fuels the heart and the liver. So the skeletal muscle cells make a heroic sacrifice in statin drug therapy in order to rescue the heart and the liver. And then the heart and liver are able to use the lactate for fuel, and therefore they can stay healthy. And so, but the muscles get completely wrecked, and then you end up with, in a wheelchair or something like that. So it's really scary, I think, that particular aspect of the statin drugs.
Is it different from the rhabdomyolysis or the bursting?
Yeah, the rhabdomyolysis is because the muscles got wrecked, and the myoglobin in the muscles precipitates out and gets the muscle falls apart, and then the myoglobin gets into the blood, and then the kidney has to dispose of the myoglobin. It has to get rid of all these things in the blood that you don't want there, because they're going to make a mess of things, and the kidney gets destroyed by the myoglobin that gums up the kidney,
because it has to filter it out.
Has to filter it out, and then that kills the kidney. Yeah, rhabdomyolysis is a very severe outcome of the muscle damage that happens in rare cases in statins.
But in virtually everyone, you had this muscle damage occurring as a result of the trying to detoxify the statin.
Yeah. So going back to this thing about statins and anti-inflammatory, I think it's true that they're anti-inflammatory. Well, it's actually complicated, because I've actually read articles that say both ways, and depending upon the concentration and all this stuff. So what they do is they mess up the cell's ability to signal to others, to communicate with other cells. And there's a whole communication process that goes on in the plaque orchestrating this activity of producing the cholesterol sulfate. And you need to oxidize the LDL in order for it to be taken up by the macrophages. So you need these oxidizing agents to do that when you don't have enough cholesterol sulfate. And the statins interfere with that, so you can't. So the cells basically are crippled, and they can't do their job, which is to produce the cholesterol sulfate. And they couldn't anyway, because the LDL is also clobbered, so that it's a perfect storm to decrease the bioavailability of cholesterol sulfate to the heart, which then means that the heart is deficient in cholesterol and deficient in sulfur. And those are two very bad deficiencies because, and of course there's also the coenzyme Q10, which is critical for the energy generation. When the cell wall of the muscles in the heart are deficient in cholesterol, then the cell starts leaking potassium, because the cholesterol keeps the skin barrier healthy. It also keeps the cell barrier healthy, and it keeps the ions in.
The cholesterol sulfate?
Yeah, well, cholesterol, actually. But cholesterol sulfate delivers cholesterol. Actually, cholesterol sulfate can go into membranes 10 times as well as cholesterol. So not only is it good at moving around in the blood, it's also good at entering the membranes. And I think the sulfate, and I'll get to the sulfate in a moment because that's also very interesting, but it gets thrown outside to create a negative charge around the cell, which is incredibly important for the cell's health. So the cholesterol in the cell membrane keeps the potassium from leaking. And this is talked about very extensively in another article that I read that was very, very interesting. And this was all about cholesterol and membranes and leaks, ion leaks. And without adequate cholesterol, the potassium leaks out, and the cell has to consume a lot of energy to keep that potassium in against that gradient. So it's constantly pumping the potassium back in again. And what it can decide to do instead is let the potassium go, let some of it go, and bring in calcium instead. Because calcium's a bigger molecule and it won't leak out. And I think that's what's going on with all this calcification. And what happens is all your artery walls get calcified and your heart valves get calcified. And meanwhile, your bones get leached of calcium and you end up with osteoporosis. Because the calcium is being stolen from the bones in order to provide it to all these cells that are deficient in cholesterol in their membranes and therefore have to replace potassium with calcium, because you need to have the ions in order for the cell to be functioning at all. So there's a replacement going on. And then once the calcium is inside the cell, cytoplasm, there's much less of a calcium gradient between the cytoplasm and these internal cellules that are, you have to get the calcium transport across the internal membranes in order to trigger contraction. So the muscle cell in the heart becomes less able to contract as a consequence of having too much calcium in the cytoplasm. And then you have the less energy generation because of the coenzyme Q10 depletion. So several ways in which, and then also you have an increased risk of infection in the heart. And that's because of the lack of the sulfate. The sulfate keeps the negative charge around the outside of the cell, and the negative charge keeps the bacteria out.
And this would be an infection from an organism floating in the blood?
Yeah, all these microbes that are getting through the skin because of the lack of cholesterol sulfate there. So they get into the skin, they also get into the gut, and they get into the lungs more easily because of the lack of cholesterol sulfate. Then they get into the blood, and then, again, because of the lack of sulfate, they get into the individual cells that are lining the artery wall and even penetrating into the heart muscle, and that gives you things like myocarditis, is that right? Heart infection of
the heart. Inflammation, but most likely inflammation from the infection.
Yeah, so it's pretty much a bad scene.
Mm-hmm. The reason I wanted to mention this to our viewers is that it's a very classic example of what's wrong with the entire system. There's this merger of industry into the scientific professionals. I mean, they literally are generating...
This is where you really need to pay attention to what this article is all about. This blows my mind here, that they really said it in public.
Tens of billions of dollars of profits. It's an enormous amount of power to do this, that it creates from this profit. So as a result, they've invested significant portions of that into marketing, and one of the most effective forms of marketing is to control the educational processes that essentially educate the professionals, because the professionals speak to the media and of course are basically talk to the patients. So if you can control the input of data that's fed to them through the editorial review boards of these scientific journals, then you really control the whole system.
Absolutely. I think that's exactly what's going on, and I think that I think many people are aware of that they cannot get their paper published in one of the high-end journals if it mentions something negative about statins. I think it's extremely difficult to get such things printed, accepted by these journals because of the influence of the statin industry on the journal. I think that's a very serious problem.
Yeah, and we have 1 in 4 Americans over the age of 45 now taking these drugs.
It's
shocking. And it's increasing. It is not decreasing.
Yes.
It's increasing.
Right. Right. And it disturbs me greatly that they're now prescribing statins to women in their reproductive years. And the doctor doesn't even bother to tell the woman that statins are class X for pregnancy, just like thalidomide. And they cause severe damage to the neural tube in the embryo, likely leading to a miscarriage. And if you're lucky, I mean, because otherwise you'll have an extremely disabled child. And I don't understand why they're not making this clear to women.
I believe you probably understand. It's just that it's such a violent objection to the ethics involved, because they know this. This is not a mystery. Yet they're willing to sacrifice human lives.
It's amazing, though.
For
it really
profit.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a sad commentary.
They are willing to sacrifice human lives for profit. That's what he just said. They are willing to sacrifice human lives for profit. There you go, Richard. Follow the money.
Terry, on the evolution that has occurred in this corporate level of influence. But it seems to be the reality that we're contending with nowadays. So
I think this is incredible. Thank you for all of the suggestions, like getting in touch with Mercola, putting this on our site, getting in touch with Dr. Seneff. She is going to be on the show. She's given us permission to publish her article that I put a link in the chat for everyone. And if you can't get to the chat, the article is called How Statins Really Work, Explains Why They Don't Really Work. I think that is a very incredible topic. How statins work explains why they don't really work. And since we did all of this, I have read an article that they're putting overweight children on statins now. Several things about statins in Wikipedia. One of them, they tell you not to use red rice yeast because that's bad and not as good as these statins. Well, levostatin, which is one of these statins, is identical to the red rice. So this L-O-V-A-S-T-A-T-I-N, fermented derived, naturally occurring compound found in oyster mushrooms and red yeast rice. But they tell you, you ought to take the levostatin because it is much better. That's like these idiots telling you, feed your baby out of a can because mother's milk is not adequate. Here I am on my soapbox again. What they are saying here is these statins, and 25% of the people in the United States, 25% of the adults are on these statins, and it majorly messes up your liver, and your liver is the major detoxifier of the body for heavy metals, for trash, and it's also the main instrument in the body that makes your hormones for reproduction, makes your hormones for digestion, makes your hormones to make everything keep moving along.
Well,
one of the other things,
the hormones are—I mean, the hormones are the foundation of—you know—they're the secret little agents that, you know, the hormone squirts out on the whole body, gets a message instantaneously. It's not even a vascular system; it's just an amazing system. So you throw this drug in there that's kicking the liver in the head and going, "No, stop producing that." I mean, I could have a word, but it would be beeped out. It's bad.
You know, this is so ludicrous, and that's why we named this Killing for Profit. They said it. I believe it. We have been working 3 months now on a computer program that goes into this entire pathway of cholesterol and what happens, and we're trying to make it so you can see exactly where your issue is. We've decoded the cholesterol sulfate. We've decoded the malvate and all of that pathway. We will have this available to the public. It's already gone off to the computer programmer who does something to put it into a program. So we just did the databases on it. But I think this is going to be a major issue with 25% of the adults, and they're now putting children on it. A major issue that bioacoustic people need to know about and need to check every one of their clients on. Somebody gave me the suggestion, do we just put all the statins in there? I did not, but I think I need to go back and decode all these statin drugs and really put them in the computer program also so we can see if any of these are causing an issue. We get a lot of our information from the government databases. One of the other one is from well, this is awful that I can't think of. Her name is Sally.
Sally Fallon.
Yes.
That's the right.
Who's head of the Weston A. Price Foundation. They've provided us a lot of information, thank you, Richard, on what is going on. So as we go through and decode this, and we have included the genes, not just the proteins, not just the activators and the nutrients, but the genes. So certainly I will run down that acetyl-carnitine that somebody has just decided to give us. But one of the things that Mercola has done is give us information about what our cholesterol levels should really be. So I thought I would share that with people on this, and then we have a tremendous ending to this show that will just blow your mind again in terms of what we're talking about here. So we're looking at this article. I've put the link in both Blog Talk and WebEx. So high-density lipids are the good guys. It's good to get high grades. So high cholesterol or high HDL is good. The LDLs are the low ones, and that's what we're going after. And we have decoded all of the triglycerides and lipoproteins that move about in your body. So if people don't know what cholesterol is, soft, waxy substance is found only in your bloodstream, but so not only in your bloodstream, but also in every cell in your body, where it helps to produce cell membranes, hormones, vitamin D, and bile acids that digest your fat. And we've included all the nutrients for that, taurine, serine, cysteine, coenzyme A, in this computer program so we can see where your lack of function really is. So lots of good information. I've marked pieces of this, pieces about vitamin D and your cholesterol. Essentially, HDL, the good kind, takes cholesterol from your body's tissues and arteries and brings it back to the liver where most of the cholesterol is produced. If the purpose of this was to eliminate cholesterol from the body, it would make sense that the cholesterol would be shuttled back to your kidneys or intestines so the body could remove it. And that's one of the things that statins interfere with, this recycling bit. It also causes inflammation. So we're looking at, without the cholesterol, the vessels constrict. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself here. Cholesterol helps ameliorate inflammation, and we've had several things now about inflammation being the one that causes disease. Yes, Kevin, thank you to everyone. Kevin wants us to announce that many of these articles about cholesterol are on Dr. Mercola's site. 9:57, we only have 3 minutes left. I must get to the end of what's going on here. This article that we're looking at now is about the insanity of lowering cholesterol and how it is just stupid and not beneficial and lines the pockets. But the best thing I wanted to show you here was what normal cholesterol is, and I think maybe I have just passed it. I did mark it, but it says this, taking somebody down to cholesterol of 72, that's crazy. And cholesterol levels that low is also associated with cancer. So let me find this in this article. It says even cholesterol of 200 would be okay. Insanity, cholesterol too low. Here it is. Now, despite the findings that there is absolutely no evidence to show that lowering your LDL cholesterol to 100 or below is good for you, what do you think the American Heart Association still recommends? Lowering your LDL cholesterol levels to less than 100, when the evidence clearly points to this idea the guidelines 70 patients risk. I don't know why I cannot find this. The Insanity of Lowering Cholesterol. It's under that section as we're flipping through all of this. This article is probably way better read on your own because there's so much in it as we go along. But it tells you a cholesterol of 200. And just do a control find and find 200 here as a... my doctor tells me cholesterol needs to be under 200 to be healthy. Not good, says Mercola. Probably any level much under 150 is not good. An optimum would be more like 200. And for the doctor to say to this guy, your cholesterol needs to be 72, she's either educated by the drug company who wants this guy on more statins to put more money in their pocket, or they're, I don't want to say this, but I have to, they're trying to kill us off. And I don't know who they are in the name of profit. You heard Mercola and Dr. Seneff talk about this. Okay, now, next step. This is a speech being read by Matt Damon, and it's a speech by Howard Zinn on what we could do about this. This speech was originally written in 1970. Listen to what they say we ought to do about this, and in terms of government and in terms of what your doctor is saying. And we'll end with this. He says that Howard Zinn says this much more poignantly than I ever could, just like Dr. Seneff brought you information much more eloquently than I could have ever said it. I just want to share the information.
I start from the supposition that the world is topsy-turvy, that things are all wrong, that the wrong people are in jail and the wrong people are out of jail, that the wrong people are in power and the wrong people are out of power, that the wealth is distributed in this country and the world in such a way as not simply to require small reform, but to require a drastic reallocation of wealth. I start from the supposition that we don't have to say too much about this because all we have to do is think about the state of the world today and realize that things are all upside down. Now, if you don't think, if you just listen to TV and read scholarly things, you actually begin to think that things are not so bad or that just little things are wrong. But you have to get a little detached and then come back and look at the world, and you are horrified. So we have to start from that supposition that things are really topsy-turvy. And our topic is topsy-turvy, civil disobedience. Now, as soon as you say the topic is civil disobedience, you're saying our problem is civil disobedience. That is not our problem. Our problem is civil obedience. Our problem is the numbers of people all over the world who have obeyed the dictates of the leaders of their government and have gone to war. And millions have been killed because of this obedience. We recognize this for Nazi Germany. We know that the problem there was obedience, that the people obeyed Hitler. People obeyed. That was wrong. They should have challenged, and they should have resisted. And if we were only there, we would have showed them. Even in Stalin's Russia, we can understand that. People are obedient. All these herd-like people. Remember those bad old days when people were exploited by feudalism? Everything was terrible in the Middle Ages. But now we have Western civilization, the rule of law. The rule of law has regularized and maximized the injustice that existed before the rule of law. That is what the rule of law has done. When in all the nations of the world, the rule of law is the darling of the leaders and the plague of the people, we ought to begin to recognize this. We have to transcend these national boundaries in our thinking. Nixon and Brezhnev have much more in common with one another than we have with Nixon. J. Edgar Hoover has far more in common with the head of the Soviet secret police than he has with us. It's the international dedication to law and order that binds the leaders of all countries in a comradely bond. That's why we're always so surprised when they get together. They smile, they shake hands, they smoke cigars. They really like one another, no matter what they say. What we are trying to do, I assume, is really to get back to the principles and aims and spirit of the Declaration of Independence. This spirit is resistance to illegitimate authority and to forces that deprive people of their life and liberty and right to pursue happiness. And therefore, under these conditions, it urges the right to alter or abolish their current form of government, and the stress had been on abolish. But to establish the principles of the Declaration of Independence, we're going to need to go outside the law, to stop obeying the laws that demand killing or that allocate wealth the way it's been done, or that put people in jail for petty technical offenses and keep other people out of jail for enormous crimes. My hope is that this kind of spirit will take place not just in this country, but in other countries, because they all need it. People in all countries need the spirit of disobedience to the state, which is not a metaphysical thing, but a thing of force and wealth. And we need a kind of declaration of interdependence among people in all countries of the world who are striving for the same thing.
That is absolutely incredible information. Please ask those who want to hear more about this civil disobedience to our medical community. Ask them to go to our site, Sound Health Solutions, or Sound Health Options, I should say, .com, and sign up and say specifically that you want to hear about how we're going to provide these software programs to the public. We are scrambling as fast as we can. The program will probably be one that we post on our site for free. I am blown away by what these two people have said, Howard Zinn, that Matt Damon is reading, and Dr. Stephanie Seneff. They are so courageous and have stepped out. They're dedicated to helping the public, and so are we. I don't know what else to say about this except we care and we want to help make a difference, and we certainly appreciate all of you being here. Look for this on our site. It will be under radio, under Blog Talk Radio. I know the sound was bad. We're going to have to edit that. We will have that done and probably get it up the next couple of days. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your encouragement. The chat has been incredible. We want to bring you more shows like this because we want to see that you have the right information to make the right decisions for your own health. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Sherry. That was stunning. As you imagine, I could jump on a soapbox, but we're already over time, so I won't, but I really want to. Yeah,
we'll do a
amazing
show. We should have a show just on bitches, gripes, and soapboxes.
We could call
we'll
it
put it together.
Soapbox episodes. Exactly. All right, thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend, Sherry. Thank you.
Bye now.